my heart towards my fellow man? Is the question now. And this will also lead us to better understand what are the walls that need to be broken down and which are the walls that need to be erected. So, can you name a few things? Why do I open my heart toward my fellow man? If it has some benefit for ourselves, that is generally true. If I open my heart to somebody because of a benefit to myself, then there is something wrong, is there? Let us name it more specifically, if possible.
In relation to self.
Yes.
Self-service.
That is also very general.
Position.
Yeah, okay. Because he honestly tells me my sin. Wait a minute, that's a positive side, isn't it? In other words, do I open my heart to somebody because he honestly tells me my sin? So it should be, you see. Seek the people who honestly tell you your sin. That is really the desire that must be there in the heart. And in this respect, I told you in the last study already, I really appreciate friends who do not speak necessarily towards my feelings, but who speak honestly with me and even tell me my sin. Because he honestly tells my sin. Do I seek somebody because he honestly tells me my sin? That must be the case. In other words, do I find comfort in rebuke? Now, with honestly telling the sin, we make a difference, of course, between those who simply criticize and those who want to help or really give a constructive criticism. Do you understand the difference between a destructive criticism and a constructive criticism? A destructive criticism is if I tell somebody, if I tell a child, for example, you do everything wrong. Whatever you do it wrong, oh, you can't do it anyway. That's destructive, because it after a while will feel absolutely unable to do anything. A constructive criticism is if I tell somebody, oh, you done it fine, but here you could do it better, and I help you doing it. I show you how it's gone. And here, look, and then the other can do it as well, and I helped him to get a higher level. That is constructive. And of course, what we want to share with one another is constructive criticism. And if we are looking for people who honestly tell us our shortcomings and our sins, that would be good. Next, because he is open for everything that is good. Do I like to share company with those who are open for everything that is good? That is the question I need to ask myself. Do I open my heart towards these people? Or, because there's no secrecy, no forming of cliques. And what is a clique? A clique is a group of people who form together and have secrets with each other against the rest of the world, so to speak, or against the society around them. And the reason for these secrets is they look for their own benefit and sometimes even the harm for other people. That is a clique. And of course, such a clique must be secret. The Ku Klux Klan would be a clique. Or something like this, you know, a secret little group. They have secrets. And if people are open, if they want to be open, for example, if somebody comes to me and complains about his wife, and I say, okay, can we go together to your wife and speak with her about this matter, so that everything is laid on the open? And he says, and what shall he say then? Does he say, yes, we do this? Or will he say, oh no, we don't do this? You see, that's the question, because there's no secrecy. Of course, at the same time, we cannot share everything with everybody. That's also clear. So a physician cannot necessarily tell his patient when he's very sick because he's not simply ready for it. Or I cannot necessarily tell every weakness of a person because he might not be able to bear it yet. Like Jesus, he had to wait for the right moment. But at the same time, there was not this secrecy around Jesus. You know, this gossiping, which is secrecy in the end, isn't it? Such things were not there. Finally, do I open my heart? Because the other person does not support me in unrighteousness. Do I appreciate this? That he does not support me in unrighteousness. And do I seek company? Do I open the heart? Because the person has the victory over sin. That is another important question, because, you know, very many people don't want to associate with those who have the victory over sin. Why? Because they feel it's a rebuke to them. And they feel they have reached such a high standard they will never reach. So when they have victory over sin, they think it's a discouragement. So they keep away from these people who have victory over sin. But that shouldn't be. I should look for those people. And I remember when I was a young person, 15, 16, 17, 18, I was having some older friends who were 5 years older or so, and I really liked the company because they had achieved already something which I desired. And I really was looking, what is the secret? But how do they do this? And I really clung to them as much as I could. I could have said, oh, they are so far. But no, I want this. And so shall we look for the people who have victory over sin? Is there one more? Oh, now we come to, why do I not open my heart? Why do I open my heart? That's right. Why do I open my heart? And why should I not open my heart? And that is because self is confirmed. You know, there are people who like to surround themselves with flatterers. And there are always flatterers around in the world. I mean, in courtship, there is this point which really needs to be seen very clearly. Do I look for a partner who just confirms myself? That is an important question. If I look for such a person who just confirms myself, then I will be disappointed. Because flattery at the beginning will end in disappointment later. Do I open my heart because I get attention? Or do I open my heart because I can do what I want and I'm tolerated? It's a wonderful society. It's a wonderful church. We can do what we want and we are tolerated. Or do I open my heart because I'm praised? Or do I open my heart because the other person has the same sins as I do? You see? He has the same sins, so that's the reason why I stick together. I found it, indeed, it is so, when people have weaknesses that are alike, then they usually bond together. Have you noticed this? That is like a magnet. They find each other. I found this in one case, there was a mental disease. The person got very upset with something because of a mental weakness. And, well, we had to deal with it for a while. And then there was another person who had a mental weakness too, of a similar kind. And I had to tell something to the person which was not very pleasant. I told the person more of Christ and less of, and I said the name. And that was too much, you know. Like more of Christ and less of Andreas. And, well, that was too much. Somehow it clicked and then boom, we were a little bit bombarded. And it was amazing how that person with that mental illness immediately sided with that other mental illness person. Immediately, as though they always were thick friends, but they weren't. But there was an immediate understanding of the two parties. That is so. If somebody has the same sin, there's a drawing towards it. But it will not cleave together, obviously. Because these weaknesses will also lead to clashes with one another. That is clear. The basic point is, if I open my heart because somebody has the same sin, I should be careful. I should rather open my heart because somebody has the victory over that sin. I should not open my heart because I am praised, but because somebody is honest with me. I should not open my heart because I do what I want. I can do what I want and I'm tolerated, but because I'm not supported in unrighteousness. I should not open my heart because I get attention, but because my attention is turned to Christ. Not because self is confirmed, but because Christ is exalted and I'm honestly rebuked. Do I look for such friends? Do I open my heart? I mean, where do I seek my friends? Where do I seek those who shall give me counsel? That is the question always needed to be asked. Jesus wants every wall in this area to be broken down so that we really look for friends that are like this. And he wants that a wall is erected in this area, that we are careful with friends, with finding friends because of that. You see this point? That is really understanding what is the right wall and what is the wrong wall. Let me see. Oh, that's something else here. Okay, let me go back again. So we have now seen why we close our heart towards our fellow men, and we have seen why we open our heart towards our fellow men. And with this, I want to leave it here for the moment. We have now seen in the great controversy and also in practical examples what it means to build walls. We have learned a little bit how to identify them, and we want to now look into the experience of the life of Jesus to understand how he helped people to break down walls. Of course, we have seen this already concerning his disciples, when he washed their feet, or even when he rebuked them. He really was breaking down or helping them to break down walls. In fact, the way that he dealt with that loitering behind is very interesting. He knew why they loitered behind. He knew it. And he waited for the right moment to talk to them, and then he simply asked them a question, "What did you talk about?" Embarrassing question for them it was, but it was helping them to eventually open up and ask that embarrassing question, "Lord, who is the greatest?" And then he called them around him. He called them near. He said, "Come here, my children. Now I must tell you something." And then he really helped them very much. I want to turn to a story that is well known to us, but is quite interesting. Before we turn to the story, do you know who the Samaritans are or were? Yes. Not quite. They were the rest of it. You see, after Solomon's reign, the kingdom of Israel was split in a northern territory and a southern territory. The southern kingdom was Judah and Benjamin, and the northern kingdom were the 10 tribes. And both apostatized from God. As a result, the Syrians came into the northern kingdom and took the people in captive and carried most of them out. But some were left in the country and other people were settled there, so they formed a mixture. And this remnants of the 10 tribes together with the heathen with whom they intermingled, that were the Samaritans. They still kept to some form of the worship of Jehovah, but they had mingled them with the idol worship. They also had their own sanctuary, not their own sanctuary, but their own holy place, which was Mount Gerizim. Was it Mount Gerizim?
Gerizim.
Where Jacob's well was. And so it was a different location altogether. It was a counter kingdom. Now, in the time of Nehemiah, what role did the Samaritans play? Nehemiah, you remember, was the man who led the Israelites back from Babylon, not the Israelites, the Jews, back from Babylon to Palestine. And he helped in erecting the walls of Jerusalem. And at that time, and a little bit later, the Samaritans came and offered their help. They said, we are worshipping God like you do. It's how often people say, well, we all worship, in the end, we all worship the same God, don't we? So we worship God as you do. Can't we help you in your work? And that was seemingly a very attractive offer, because the Jews were a small people. They were in need of all resources that they could get. And they didn't, they weren't surrounded by friends exactly, but rather by enemies. And to get such an offer of those who were relatives to them, even distant relatives, seemed to be quite good. And what did the children of Israel answer? They said, "You have no part in building the temple or in building Jerusalem." Why were they so cruel? I mean, they were building walls, weren't they? Literally. They were building walls between them and the Samaritans. Was it right or was it wrong? Many Israelites thought it was wrong. Many Jews thought it was wrong, for sure. You would find Jews who would think it's wrong. Likewise today, when we deal strictly with sinners, there are always people who think that's wrong. You shouldn't have done this. And when the person then leaves the church, they say, "Ha, you see, it's because you were not more lenient towards them. You built the walls. You did it." How often have we heard this? So, were they right or were they wrong in building that wall? Of course, the Word of God tells us they were right, so we have to admit to this. They built a wall against what? What should this wall keep out from Israel?
Idolatry.
Sin, clearly. Idolatry in that time was always combined with immorality. And to this Israel would of necessity have been led had they accepted the Samaritans. Another point is, of course, that they had to protect something. What did they have to protect?
Yeah.
Their covenant with God. The ark wasn't there at that time, but their covenant with God. They had to protect their faithfulness to God.
What was the ark?
No, that was at the Babylonian captivity. It was hidden. It was never found again. So the point is basically that they were faithful to God, and they were guarding that faithfulness carefully. And that's the reason why they could not allow the Samaritans to help them. Now, it is very interesting how the Samaritans reacted as a result of this. How did they react? They were very angry. And as a result, they became one of their worst enemies, trying to hinder the work as much as they could. Now, somebody could say, "Well, that's the reason why you built walls. That's why you did not allow them to work together." But you know, these leaders, these Jewish leaders, they had discernment. They understood what they did. This wall was the wall that God commanded them to build, definitely. And since the Word of God tells us this, we have to agree with it, you see. But let us put into the positions of the people back there, how many of us would have said, "This is a wall you shouldn't have built"? How many would have this said? Can you imagine this? It was not an easy stand the leaders had to take in this regard. Now, I should emphasize here that rejecting this offer of the Samaritans did not exclude any person, whether he was a Samaritan or a Babylonian or from wherever, to become converted and become a Jew. In other words, it did not exclude anyone from the kingdom of God. And that is something the Jews later didn't understand anymore. You see, that what was an exclusion against sin, that was a wall against sin and a protection for righteousness, later became a wall between Samaritans and Jews as such, to the point where a Jew would not even talk with a Samaritan, regardless of who he was, of how much interest he would have in the truth or whatever. They wouldn't talk with him. He's a Samaritan, that was sufficient. And now the wall, which was a justified wall, became a selfish wall. You see, that wall which God commanded them to erect, they forgot. In fact, they broke it down because the Jews at that time, they made many compromises with the world, with the Romans, as you know, with Pilate and so forth. How many walls did they break down there when they betrayed Jesus to Pilate? It was just amazing. But at the same time, the erected walls, their own walls, their selfish walls, the erected walls against the Samaritans as such, not against their sin, against the people. And what did they want to protect? Their selfishness. They wanted to be the elect. We ourselves are higher than everybody else. And what did they want to keep out? anybody else who could threaten their position. That was their motive behind it. So that was the reason now why the Jews built wall in later times. Built walls. Can you see how the right wall became the wrong wall? Maybe you can say it has extended on the wrong side while the right wall was tumbling down, the wrong wall was erected.
Yes.
And now Jesus came to break down that wall. You see, when you look superficially at this matter, you would say, the Jews in the time of the exiles were refusing the Samaritans to build with them. So they built a wall between them and the Samaritans. Then when Jesus came, he broke down these walls. But this is not the case. They were different walls that Jesus broke down. And this we need to understand. Now, let us turn to John chapter 4. And this is a very nice story that explains this to us. Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus... Well, we begin in verse 5. So, he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now, Jacob's well was there. Was this the Mount Gerizim? Forgot now. Maybe that's another place. I'm not sure now. Now, Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." That's not what she said, but this is the commentary of the writer of the Gospel. For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. In other words, there are thick walls between them. And these are the walls that are described in Ephesians chapter 2. You who were far off and those who were near. He made both one. He made peace, breaking down the middle wall of partition. And how Jesus did this is very graphically described in that very story that we are reading here. Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst, but the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." Now, how did Jesus begin to break down the middle wall of partition and to make of the two one? How did he begin this? That's right. He asked them for a drink, which is quite interesting. Asked them for a favor. That reminds me of the story of William Miller, who invited the physician to his home and asked him to please look after his wife. And then when he was finished, he asked him to look after himself. He asked him for a favor. You see? So likewise, if we acknowledge that we need help from people in the world, that may be a breaking down of a wall, very much. I still remember when we got some new neighbors in the place where we live, in Germany. The new neighbors were trying to introduce themselves, and they were inviting me, "Do you want to come over to little..." I don't know what she said. She said, "Come, do you want to come over to a little introduction or so?" And somehow she combined it with drinking, and my reaction was, first of all, I don't have time, secondly, I don't drink. So I said, "I don't drink. I don't drink alcohol." Oh, you don't need to drink alcohol. I really don't have time. Immediately I built a wall, you know. Maybe I should have gone, just said hello to them. Welcome here in our neighborhood. But immediately, "I don't drink." That's my reaction. She didn't mean this, you know. She didn't want to invite me to a drink. What she wanted to invite is say hello to the neighbors. Anyway, I felt that I always felt guilty after. I always felt I must somehow break this up again, but I didn't know how. And then we had a funeral, and I invited them over to come to the funeral, and also afterwards, after the funeral, to come and stay with us for a while. Maybe that was not a nice occasion, true. But at least it was an occasion. And I really must say, at that time, I conscientiously took effort to talk with them. I offered them, in German we have the Sie and Du, that is talking in third person to the person and in a second person. We don't say you to each other. We say they. Can they please do this instead of can you do please do this? Sounds funny in English, I know. But it's a habit, you know, when you're strangers you say they. But when you're friends and know each other very closely, you say you. So when you offer somebody to call you with a first name and say you, that means you really offer him friendship. So I tried to do this a little bit. And they were very willing. I mean, it was a good occasion. You have to say, I need something from you, no? It was a funeral, I needed comfort. I need something from you, I need comfort, please come. And they came. So when we tell them we need something from you, that is when we break down the walls. And that is something we need to learn. Some people have it simply naturally in them. I was very impressed when in New Zealand, Anthony told me how he deals with his neighbor. You know, he sometimes goes and helps him, then the neighbor comes and helps them. There are only a few people living there, and they have to help each other to survive, so to speak. And that developed a culture of neighborhood, which we need to have in the city. That's unthinkable of, is it? In a big city, everybody lives in his block, in the self-contained. But, yeah, so we have to learn to really break down these walls like Jesus did. Give me a drink. I need something. You have something that I don't have. And she was very surprised because, first of all, he was a Jew, and secondly, he was a man. For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Now, then Jesus invited her to also ask him of something. He didn't keep back with what he had. He said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me to drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. He didn't say, now, you have to ask me for living water, but he said, if you would. He invited her. Do you want? That is politeness, isn't it? Courtesy. He didn't put his door into the feet and say, now, you must ask her for living water. Fun? Turn the feet in the door. You must ask me for living water. He said, if you ask me for living water, I gladly give it to you. Do you want to? Here it is. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? She suspected that there's something behind it, and she wanted to know more. And then Jesus told her that who drinks of this water will thirst again, but the water I give him is living water. And then she really said, sir, give me this water that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw. Now Jesus was giving her water, but in a very unexpected form. Would you like to have this water? Jesus said to her, call your husband and come here. Embarrassing question. Very embarrassing for her. The best way to answer it is, I have no husband. We sometimes get these embarrassing questions. I mean, that she should turn the subject on this. But this was the living water, you know. Living water sometimes looks different than we think. It was combined, you can say, with a rebuke. And the question is, do we really want this? The woman wanted. She really was thirsty. She said, sir, first of all, Jesus answered, you have well said, I have no husband, for you had 5 husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. in that you spoke truly. That is embarrassing, isn't it? I mean, for any woman, that's terrible to hear such a thing, even if this was the truth. The woman answered and said, wait a moment. The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet." In other words, what you say is the truth. She was honest. She really opened her heart. Can you see? Her walls were tumbling down. Can really see a torn down wall here. "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet." If a person can be honest about his sin, if a person can say, "Yes, that is the truth. Yes, that's what I am," that is something. Because the normal reaction is quickly close. As soon as my sin is mentioned, close everything and build a high wall around me. The best thing is to run away and not talk about this matter. That's the easiest. "No, I don't want to talk about my sin, please." But she was open. "Sir, I perceive you are a prophet. Tell me more." In other words, "I notice this is living water. I want to have more of this. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such a worship, such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth." The woman said to him, "I know that the Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." And at this point, his disciples came and then marveled that he talked with a woman. Yet no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why are you talking with her?" Why didn't they say this? Why didn't they ask? Because of the wall, exactly. They were so embarrassed that their master should talk with a Samaritan woman that they didn't dare to ask. It's sad. It is sad. And yet they received a lesson here, a very important lesson. The woman left her water pot, not because of the coming disciples, but for another reason, went her way into the city and said to the men, "Come, see a man who told me all things that I ever did." That was embarrassing for her to say this, but you know, all this was gone now. She had found the water of life, and against this, her sin was not crushing her down anymore. I mean, it was true that she was a sinner, but yeah, she sacrificed the dignity. That's true. I'm unimportant. Look, come in. Go to him. He has the water of life. He told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? Then they went out of the city and came to him. Now the scene changes. It's like a film, you know. The camera is pointed to Samaria, to what is happening there. Now it's pointing to the disciples again, because they left with him while the woman was going into the city. In the meantime, his disciples urged him, saying, "Rabbi, eat." But he said to them, "I have food to eat of which you do not know." Therefore the disciples said to one another, "Has anyone brought him anything to eat?" Jesus said to him, "My food is that I do the will of him who sent me, and to finish his work." And then he continued to say something very interesting. "Do you not say, there are still 4 months and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already white for the harvest." What did Jesus see? And what did the disciples see literally in the moment that they lifted their eyes? They saw the people coming out of the city together with the woman. "Lift up your eyes. The harvest is white." They lifted up their eyes and all these people coming, the Samaritans, and they wanted to hear from him. So he was really telling them, "Look, this is the harvest. For this you must look." He was really breaking down walls also between his disciples and the Samaritans, you see. So, verse 39, "And many of the Samaritans of that city believed in him because the word of the woman testified. The scene changes again. The camera goes back to the city. He told me all things I ever did. So when the Samaritans had come to him, so they were on the way to him. Now they go out. Meanwhile, Jesus had talked, lift up your eyes. When they were coming to him, they urged him to stay with them. And he stayed there 2 days, and many more believed because of his own word. Then they said to the woman, now we believe not because of what you said, for we ourselves have heard him, and we know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. Here Jesus really had broken down walls. And these walls were broken down later, also with the Syrophoenician woman, or the Canaanite woman. There's a whole chapter in Desire of Ages. Do you know the title of that chapter? Exactly. Barriers broken down. In other words, walls broken down. And I really recommend that you read this chapter. We do not have the time to do this here. It also talks how Jesus did this. Then later on, we could study especially the event how Jesus was breaking down barriers in the mind of Peter when he had this dream. And then he arranged that Cornelius' servants were coming just at that moment when Peter had that dream. And then together they would go to Cornelius in order to bring him the message. And then Cornelius would accept the message. And as a result, they were truly seeing how the gospel went to the Gentiles. And Peter said, now, they received the Holy Spirit as we did. What hinders them to be baptized? And in that moment they were baptized. And they were not circumcised. So a wall was really broken down. And this helped in the First Jerusalem Council to also break down the same walls and to really open the door for the Gentiles. Now we need to ask ourselves the question today, time is over, we need to ask ourselves the question, where are the walls for us that need to be broken down so that we can really reach the people in the world? We have to realize that whereas there are some walls that need to be there in order to keep sin out and to keep righteousness in, at the same time they need to be walled, they need walls to be broken down. That's very important. May the Lord open our eyes that we can truly see this and become true missionaries to the world. With this I want to close, and then we continue later, tomorrow. Yes?
Shouldn't we first emphasize to break down the walls between Salah and them to the world?
Exactly. Exactly. In other words, did you understand? Yeah. We first break down the walls to each other and then to the world. That's right. In other words, we must be honest with each other. I mean, somebody asked me a question today, and I really appreciate this concerning the costs of the CD. I mean, if you have such questions or if you have anything on your heart, I want that you feel free to ask these things to me. I will not be offended, and I would gladly receive them. And if there's anything between us, we must bring it on the table. Now is the opportunity before the Lord's Supper, really, so that they can be removed and we can be truly unified. That's very important. So with this, I want to close. Do you have any questions or thoughts on this still? Yes, Uta?
I mean, this is an example of truth, to break down the truth, but the Pharisees is another thing.